Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Carver Watson, Karen Durante and Beau Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning. Before we start, we acknowledge the sovereignty of all First Nations people right across the country, particularly the local traditional owners of our immediate broadcast area, the Yuggera, Turrbal, Mananjali, Kumbumeri, Quandamooka and Kabi Kabi people. And of course we acknowledge our elders, elders of the first people of the country and elders of more recent arrivals and all of our listeners tuned in across via the National Indigenous Radio Service. It's great to be here with two deadly co-hosts, Bo Spearham. Good morning.
Morning. How you going?
I'm going good. Who's your mob? Where are you from?
Gumroi, Kuma and Marawari. Northern New South Wales and Southern Queensland, as you know, a lot of our mobs do. We, you know,
went to the city.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dad's from Moree, mum's from Brewarrina. They left in their teens to go to boarding school, and you know, like dad got kicked out of Moree, and mum she left, and at a young age, like her siblings, they went to school in the cities and stuff. Yeah.
Your mum's still down there, Blue Mountains?
She's still there, yeah. Yeah, she's still. I was talking to her the other day. She's going to come up for baby girl's birthday, which is the 3rd of next month, but we're going to do something on the weekend.
Deadly.
And that day, so she, she's going to come up for that day.
Shout out to her, Nerida.
Yes, every time I talk to her, she says to say hello to Carver. And that day, yeah.
And Karen Durante, good morning to you.
Good morning, Carver. Good morning, Bo.
Good morning.
Who's your mob? Where are you from?
I'm from the Torres Strait, long way from home. My mother is Wagadagam and South Sea Islander, and my father is Miriam and Filipino.
Oh,
but I have been living on mainland Australia since 1990. Mm. So, yeah, I call myself a mainland islander now, basically. It's interesting, when I went up home last year, I called Brisbane home, which must have... mustn't have gone down very well amongst the family. Because now they're pushing me to come back home.
Yeah, so you must have been a mainlander as long as you. How old are you, Bo?
I am 29.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've got a 27-year-old daughter, so yeah, I'm old enough to be your mother.
Yes.
So be respectful, Bo. Nah, don't.
Are you going to call you Arnie KD?
Oh, no.
No? Well, thank you for joining us this morning.
Mm.
Also, big shout out to their mob and Roeburn, because they take our show as well.
Oh yeah, deadly.
Yeah.
Roeburn, as in Western Australia.
Yeah, Western
mob.
Australia. Sorry. Yeah. Shout out to the Noongar mob over there.
Oh yeah, they were really keen to catch up with the Wild Black Women when they were here last year.
Yes. Grab Chelsea out there.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, speaking of that, we had a conference and met a lot of broadcasters from all over the country last week. What did you think of that?
I thought it was good to, bring, you know, all our voices together. Because I guess, it's sort of, you can feel lonely, us being the only, black station. Yeah, sort of in our vicinity here.
In a metropolitan market like Brisbane,
But then also, remote places as well, I'm sure there's quite a few Aboriginal radio stations within Western Australia, within South Australia, but, they're really remote. But no, I thought it was really good, to have NITV.
Other radio stations.
Newspapers as well, Indigenous X, some of the mob who do a lot of good online stuff as well.
Yeah. You do forget there are other Indigenous broadcasters and media orgs out there, And the same but different, Each one has their sort of preferred platform, the print, online and radio, TV and that sort of stuff.
Mm.
But I think the thing that came through is that, for all of us, it's about maintaining a strong voice for our communities and our people.
Definitely. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the reason why many of them were set up around, 30-odd years ago. Well, in our case, 25 years ago.
Yes.
Well, longer than that.
Longer than that.
So to give some context for the listeners out there, we're turning 25 in the start of April, 6th of April.
Straight after Easter.
Straight after Easter. It's a Friday, end of the week. And
Carver said he was going to bake us a chocolate cake, eh? Hey?
Yeah, you don't want that. It'll be.
It'll only look
chocolate because it'll be charcoal on the outside.
Oh, and everything inside still melted, not cooked.
Yeah.
So crackers. It's
really what you could say. It's what was it? A caramelised and a nice gooey centre.
Yeah.
You know?
But we do turn 25, but it's our 25 years of broadcast. And what a lot of people don't know is that we incorporated 5 years before that. 1988 was when we first incorporated as Beamer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in our bid for the licence. And then the licence process dragged out another few years because we got it and then somebody appealed it, another radio station appealed it, and there was a bit of a tribunal process. And then we got it reaffirmed in 91 and we went to air in 1993. So what we're celebrating is the 25 years of broadcast.
Being on air.
That's 25 years this radio station has been pumping out sound to the speakers of all of our audience and the mob that listen and tune in.
So, you'd have some good stories over the years, but then also, you know, like stories, you know, 25 years ago, you know, running around in the studios.
Oh, yeah, as a kid. Yeah. I still remember turning up when they were fitting out the original place in the old Barclay Mullen building as a child.
Mm.
And they were just fitting it out. So, they were taking walls down and putting soundproofing in and that sort of stuff. But it didn't start on level 8. It started on, like, level 3 or something. Like, it was, like, way down.
That's the old building over at
Barclay Mullen.
Yeah, Rockley.
So it started, like, down, I think it was, like, level 3, and then it went up to level 8, and then they had training on level 6, and then, and then we came here.
I've never been there.
Haven't you?
You didn't go to Fairfield?
No. Even when, like, yous were doing, like, the work, the training and stuff back in the day, I never went there.
Yeah, right.
So you came here when we moved into this
like Pete
flash new building.
Yeah, your brothers were there,
Yeah.
I still think about that carpet that was on the 8th floor. I'm sure that was as old as the organisation. Yeah.
I still remember grabbing, because we used to get weather via the fax and it'd come in every half hour.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I understood that it was important that the fax go to the presenters. And I used to run it in for them to announce the weather on air. And I went in one time while they were on air and I get a bit of a telling off.
Live on air too?
Yeah.
Real Murray Station.
that's how you learn sometimes, eh? Yeah, you got to bump against the sides.
Oh, fax, eh? Those were the days. I remember telex. So I'm showing my age there.
What's that?
Don't start. I'll post it on your Facebook page just for you so you can have a look at the technology that was around pre-80s days.
Also, didn't we play a lot of first music from some Deadly Aboriginal artists as well?
Yeah, so in the very early days, there's some great old stories. The Murray Hour actually
The
Murray Hour. And it was the same for, you know, Sydney and Radio Redfern and that sort of stuff. So these were like the only places that a lot of people could actually get their hands on Indigenous music. And people would usually like record the show with the old tape cassettes. And I still remember.
You know what cassettes are, right, Bart?
Isn't that where you put your iPhone in the car?
So the first show. So it was actually the Murray Hour where I believe, and Uncle Kev Carmody tells his story. It's where he first recorded
Thou
Shall Not Steal. Yeah. And so we'll have to get some of them old stories and we'll play them out on
6th of April,
25 years of 98.9 FM.
Yep. And we'll be posting out a video sometime this week featuring some staff members here from 98.9 FM and talking about, well, one in particular who's been here potentially the longest, about as long as Uncle Pete.
Trisha. Shout out to you, Trish. I know you're sitting up there.
She's got us on the radio. She's listening to us and saying, do not say my name.
Hey, you're going to be on the screen soon.
Yes.
We've got a video coming out.
We're going to still convince Trisha to get a Facebook page.
She's not on Facebook.
Okay. Yeah. Because we're
on
Facebook.
Yeah.
No. They're rarities here.
Yeah. I was on it, but Yeah. Mm. It did. I'm on the record of saying I don't feel like it's like real life. Do you know what I mean? Facebook. Yeah.
No, I have to admit I haven't been using it much lately.
Yeah.
Oh, considering the stuff that's been going on as well. I mean, yeah. You know, sunrise.
Yes. Well, getting to that. Did we all see the story last week on Sunrise about, I believe it was a minister for child safety?
Minister for children?
Children. Come out and
David
say,
Gillespie, I think.
And
yeah.
say
yeah.
that that white families should be able to adopt Indigenous kids.
Mm.
And more or less the way that the story was framed is that non-Indigenous families are currently restricted from taking on Indigenous young people who are at risk of abuse and that, or not safe at home.
And that, yeah. and like the, that was like pretty much the headline as well. Like,
it was absolutely the headline.
Mm.
It was absolutely clickbait material. Yeah.
It
that was
absolutely false.
And false.
It was misleading. Yeah. But the big sort of, I guess, the match that sort of sparked the inferno that ensued was the Sunrise panel. With two non-Indigenous social commentators, let's call them, Prue McSweeney, yeah, another bloke from 4BC here in Brisbane.
Ben Davis. Just name them.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't watch the show, so I'm not really up on it.
I stopped watching Sunrise a long time ago. At the beginning, I think it was a breath of fresh air in the sense that, you know, you had something other than the Karl Stefanovics of the world to watch of a breakfast show. But, yeah, frankly, who has the time to watch it? But, you know, clearly I'm glad that people did see it and then that news sort of circulated throughout the community and, the reaction was... You know, amazing. It's still ongoing.
Yeah. I mean, one of the sort of statements that really sort of standed out to me was, Prue saying that we need to stop with this political correctness and, you know, and understand that if children are removed for good reason, then maybe we should have another stolen generation.
No, all of the things that she said was factually incorrect. I mean, talking about the whole premise of stolen generations that children were taken for their well-being and that sort of stuff, that was crap. It was, you know, a policy, you know, created to breed out black, you know, in much the same way as they've attempted to do in the United States as well with, with Native American people. So, you know, this whole breeding out has been around for yonks and to dress it up as... Oh, no, we were taking them because, you know, Aboriginal mothers were not caring for their children or it was just a load of codswallop.
And the actual story, I think, was built on very shaky grounds. Like we said, the actual story in the statement by the minister is not factually correct. Like, it's a child placement principle to... as a preference, place them with with family members, extended family members or community members and or other Indigenous people.
Yeah.
But as a last resort, if either of those things don't work out, then looking at alternative circumstances, i.e. non-Indigenous families or outside a community or what the situation is. So to say that that non-Indigenous families are restricted from taking on or frame it that way was just it's borderline lying, you know? And to then to actually get people to come on a national platform and then just perpetuate those sort of falsehoods, it's quite unethical, you know.
What's her background?
I don't know if she's been around for ages and has always been a social commentator. I think she was on Beauty and the Beast. You know, that was a panel show that had Darren Hinch as the anchor and Stan Zemanek as well back in the day. So she's been around with those sort of shows that have been there. How she emerged to become a commentator, I can't say with any certainty, but I do remember her from those days. So it's interesting to see people like that still being trotted out, you know, who have a particular view of the world and, you know, have never had anything to do with Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people in their life and then to be asked to comment on something as, you know, and not ask the you know, we've got a biggest mob of people working in media now. We've got, you know, a former host of this program, Amy McGuire, out there, who's, you know, well-informed, in touch with people and with the issues and that sort of thing, and can explain these things. I mean, her breakdown of all the stuff that this all-white panel talked about, you know, argued the you know, what they were saying was untrue, and did so in a very, well, better, you know, practiced better journalism than that panel did anyway, or the entire Sunrise team for that matter.
It seemed a bit artificial, but go on, you was going to say something.
I was going to say, you know, like, you know, like, there was, you know, we had, you know, almost 100, you know, Aboriginal, you know, people who work in the media section that would have been right to, you know, give a comment on that as well, you know, all in one place here in Brisbane. And then, like you said, you know, like there's, you know, Amy, I think there was Nakia, I think there's like a few people, you know, that jumped
Danny
on.
As well, Danny.
Danny jumped on, you know, like, but then also, like, a lot of mob, you know, were uploading, you know, stuff on social media saying, you know, like, talking about their experience, you know, growing up, whether it wasn't with their immediate family or with other family members or adopting, you know, or, you know, rearing up, you know, younger kids and stuff. You know, like I thought, you know, like, you know, there was like that was a really, really good response. You know, yeah, mob just saying, you know, like this is, you know, talking about their experience.
Yeah, and there wasn't just an outrage. There were people who came out and actually just destroyed it with facts. You know, there was somebody from NITV whose name's escaped me, from Viceland, I believe, that did a fact check. And that was an awesome short video.
Was that the journo who threw the computer down?
Actually done the Kalgoorlie's
And so... And I'm like, and I certainly tip my hat to those people, because I mean, it's how do I don't understand how in this day and age people can get away with just perpetuating falsehoods and, you know, and mistruths.
Well, they still think that Australia was settled, not invaded, so you know they're gonna, you know, run with whatever else.
Well, that's a good point. Our legal system is still functioning with some mistruths and falsehoods.
Oh,
they
goodness.
they call Terra Nullius a legal fiction, so that's a legal lie. but moving on to the response, I thought it was deadly to see, and it was raised and mentioned at the forum last week that there was three Indigenous women who came out in like that day
morning
before lunchtime, before 12 p.m. before afternoon, had articles up.
Was it Chelsea? Yeah, I mean, Celeste Little,
and another.
Yeah, I thought this was the girl's name. Yeah,
yeah.
This not in Melbourne. No. Anyway.
But
and this is the thing. I guess it also brought home to, we were talking about the IRCA Converge conference, that sort of thing, just sort of solidified why Indigenous people need to have their own media, because we can't expect non-Indigenous people to speak for us. We need to speak for ourselves, you know, and so that brought home that important point, I guess, for all the people that were there last week.
Yeah, I mean, you have a story like that that comes out the morning of the conference. It just reminds you, like, why Indigenous media remains an essential service, you know, because there's still this sort of stuff going on and there's still a need for our mob to be telling our own story. Yeah. You're listening to Let's Talk. We're going to take a break for a song. I'm sitting here with our usual co-hosts, or hosts of Let's Talk, Bo Spearham, and our regular guest, Karen Durante. We're going to listen to a song. We'll be back shortly. Make sure you don't go anywhere.
What country did your people come from? We'll take you in just the same and share a land you call Australia. Now newborn children's eyes awaken. Will they be touched by ancient hands? There's a future road to be taken. Don't leave it.
it buried in the sands. Don't know how many thousand years we seem to see into the distance. Now we must conquer many fears. This land's worth more than gold and silver. 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 Gold and silver. This land's worth more than gold and silver.
Carver Watson, Karen Durante and Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Welcome back. Joined in the studio by those two named people, Bo Spearham, KD. And we've been talking about Sunrise, who've made headlines, Indigenous headlines, for all the wrong reasons. Not the first time.
Mm. Do you remember that time when they had the...
Twins. Are you going to talk about the UK twins?
Yeah. And yeah. I think it was the same. It was Sam as well, who commented.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that other one, she's got the good genes or something like that.
You can't script this stuff.
Yeah.
Eh?
Yeah, no, it's not the first time, and I don't think it's going to be the last time. Apparently, you were saying that Sunrise did actually have some commentators, Indigenous commentators, and they weren't the Jacinta Prices or the Warren Mundines of the world.
Yeah.
They were actually three people who, come from very strong academic and community backgrounds in the form of Olga Havnen, James Ward as well, and the other person, Pat Turner, who's been around for...
That was on this morning. I watched that.
Yeah. How'd you feel?
I was a bit disappointed that it was David Kosh and not Samantha Armitage.
Well, the bushfires in, what's that place in New South Wales? That's your home country?
No, I thought that was down the coast.
Bega, around Bega, was it?
Bega, isn't Bega in Victoria?
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Bega cheese?
Yeah, Bega.
Is Bega...
Doesn't most cheese come from Victoria?
Taratha or something around that's the name of the community?
Oh, no, yeah, that's like right, like it's not northern New South Wales, is it? Them fires?
Mm.
It's just a fire that I think took everybody by surprise because they're all talking about the cyclone up in Darwin where people were just sort of casually, as northern Australians do when it comes to cyclone season, it's only category 2.
Mm.
I'm going to go for a drink after this type thing, And then, of course, the bushfires in Victoria. But this one was...
That's a good metaphor. That's like the same thing that happened last week. Samantha Armitage is talking about problems and issues and like a tragedy, and now she's in Victoria talking about bushfires, who if the council's listened to First Nations people about how to manage country and solutions and way that we and our knowledge, then these disasters would be avoided. And so a lot would argue that it's the same with child removals,
Meanwhile, Kosh is putting out her bushfire.
But, yeah, it was David Kosh doing this morning. I would have wished I think it would have been good if she was part of that conversation. But, I think he tried to play it even-handedly.
Mm.
Yeah.
But they did the thing is, why didn't they do that in the first instance?
Because it was clickbait.
Mm. Yes.
Like it genuinely was. And that's the thing I was sort of said before. Like the whole thing had this air of artificial outrage about it. It was just an opportunity to get a few people to express outrage on something that I think they may have even thought would cause a bit of a social media uproar.
Mm.
Yeah. I was thinking last week, I was like, we got to tell people, like, stop getting outraged at it because, like, their metrics are just going up.
Well, this is
so it's had the desired effect.
No, I think Carver and I, you and I were having this conversation and I was saying, but that's exactly what they want. They want us to be outraged. You're driving traffic to their program. The program is getting heaps of mentions on social media and it's being shared here, there and everywhere. Yeah. And this is
shock
good, but bad publicity is good.
Mm.
And
she acknowledged it, like when she was done that tweet as well.
Mm.
So, I know, I'm your clickbait, but leave my name out of it, or that's defamation. And just dubbed, Prue Shredding. It was Prue who said it.
Any first year journalist will tell you that you can't just blame the person. You're also liable as well in that sort of stuff because you've allowed it to go to air.
Mm.
You can't blame the person who said it.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
Hey, I reckon there's an opportunity here. Channel 7 must be in dire need of some cultural awareness training or something like that.
No. You go.
All you fellas out there who go to work with these companies with raps and all that kind of thing, there might be a marketing opportunity here with Channel 7. Just saying, they might be thinking about upskilling a bit in the area of Indigenous affairs.
Mm. If anything, what I would have done is actually, target the people the companies that advertise on Sunrise because at the end of the day, that's where their revenue is.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
Now, immediately after the panel was a protest.
Yeah.
People turned up the very next morning. I think it started pretty small. There's only like a couple of people the very next morning.
At Martin Place there outside. Yeah.
And because they got that thing, you know, the people can walk along and they wave to
their family
and all that.
Yeah, we love that when we have audience interaction from Martin Place. But not the, you know, not when they're holding up signs, you know. Mm. We got to think of the little children. Oh, my goodness. That was rich of them.
It's grown a fair bit.
Yeah. Mm. And then that's this morning as well, I saw NITV was there doing a live cross.
Yeah.
Not as many people as was Friday.
Yep.
Because I think they had a couple of hundred, almost like
1,000. And they got a bit rowdy.
Yeah.
Had I think the desired effect, though.
I think they had to take like a still of
Martin Place, where there's nothing going on in the background. There's no protest happening behind us, you know?
No. We're all
the whole morning, too. So they had like a fake
backdrop.
Like a reel just
loop.
Yeah, like a loop. Yeah,
it's okay that guy just walked past again.
Not doing it. Always doing laps. But apparently they were quite rowdy, and it even came to the point where people were reading the news and had to speak in like a bit of a raised tone because they were that. I don't know if they were banging on glass or what happened, but it got a bit.
It's good though when you see the community galvanize like that. It just feeds your spirit, makes you feel strong. You know, you only wish that you could be there part of the action, but you know, leading into the Commonwealth Games, I guess, you know, there'd be some people with fire in their belly heading to the Gold Coast.
You'd like to think, of course,
you know, somebody threw out the usual thing, it looks like rent a crowd again. It's like, seriously, really?
Well, you know, and we've spoken about this a couple of times now, and there is a growing sentiment, again, amongst the younger people, the younger generation, about this need to be vocal once again about, you know, dissatisfaction with the status quo and how Indigenous affairs are viewed and the lack of progress in Indigenous affairs. And, I mean, that's not an old yarn.
Mm.
Yarn's been going on since day dot.
1788.
But what is planned for the Comm Games? Bo, he's going to have a presence down there.
There'll be
activities and, you know, some rallies and yarns going on down there.
Going to, like, set up camp down there. But then also have, like, you know, specific marches and protests. Obviously the opening. That's going to be that'll be a night one, a night protest. Which hopefully it's nice and cool. I'm sure it will be. You know, and but then like the Royals, they've been here for quite like they get here. So like they'll be doing the opening. And I'm sure they'll
Charles?
Yeah, Charles and Camilla.
Yeah.
I thought Camilla had pulled out.
No, she's coming and then she's going home.
Okay.
And then so then he's going to like Cairns. Yeah, there's some places that he's going.
You got that? They released their travel schedule. You know, because when you study law, you encounter all different sorts of people. And I encountered what was he called? They've got a name. It's like, you know, they've got the young labor or young leaders. He was a young, what's the word? Monarchist. And so, brother man had his diary with like in his phone with where they're all going to be and times and appearances. And
also,
sort of stuff.
Too, up in Yarrabah, they actually got a chance to disrupt the baton relay.
They did?
They did, yeah, they did up in Yarrabah.
What happened there?
A couple of them got arrested.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the Queen's Baton.
Yeah.
Mm. Going through Yarrabah. And then, some of the mob stopped it there.
Well.
How'd they do that?
They just stood in the road. On the road.
A bunch of mob could have said,
no.
Yeah, but I can't speak for my mob, Torres Strait. I don't pretend to. I'm not going to do do what some other Indigenous people in the media do. But, so the baton stopped off in the Torres Strait first. And, you know, the first person to carry the baton was Uncle Sam and Dan.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting one, you know, because thinking, hang on there, Torres Strait is the first place, you're the first baton holder and all that kind of stuff. You know, I just sort of think, should our mob be, like I'm talking about, should my mob be a bit more sort of...
little bit more sort of opposed to the games and that sort of thing.
But
this is the thing, though, too. Like, what is...
Because I don't think it's just here, you know, like my community. Mm. There are other sort of communities across mainland Australia where it's kind of like...
Happy with the status quo. Mm. I think Jessica Malboy, Patrick Johnson, like they held a baton, a baton, as well.
But this is the thing too, and I'd be interested in your thoughts about mob who do participate in the games and that sort of stuff. Like I have my views, but what do you think about, you know, whether it be Indigenous athletes participating in the games?
Traders? No, like good on them. You know, like, you know, what they're doing, you know, and I hope they do very, very well, you know, but at the same time, you know, like we do, you know, have, you know, like hopefully they acknowledge what we're doing as much as we acknowledge what they're doing as well.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, like if they win gold, you know, I'll be proud as well.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, or if they place, you know, very well, like I'd be as proud as well, you know. I think that's an achievement, you know, for all of us as well. Mm. But, you know, like I was saying, you know, like I just hope, you know, the acknowledgement, you know, goes both ways of the importance of us, you know, being on the outside as well.
Yeah. You can do both.
Mm.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think there's this
like Hooper, you know, years ago when he wore the T-shirt, you know, that in itself was, you know, a powerful statement. Mm. You know, whether or not, you know, like, he saw it as a political thing, you know, he just wanted to say, you know,
Kathy Freeman, when she ran with the Aboriginal flag as well. Yeah.
Mm. That thing of I see and I feel like sometimes our communities become like very polarizing, and that's the same thing for like non-Indigenous communities and people, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's like you're Labor, I'm Liberal, and it's there's this constant sort of like, I guess...
competitive.
Yeah, this competitive thing, but, you know, our mobs are diverse, you know, and all of our mobs have different ways of contributing to our community and to the legacies of our community and our old people.
Mm.
Yeah. And so it is about that respect thing.
Mm,
you know, there's this mutual respect for however people contribute.
Absolutely. Mm. You're not going to agree on everything. I mean, just look at families, our families.
Mm-hmm. Don't get me started.
But no, so some stuff around the Royals, but then also Friday the 13th, Black Friday. So we're planning like...
Oh, is that the second...
Yeah, that's the second week. So I'm gonna theme some like obviously some protests, but then also some concerts, some music and stuff out there as well. So if there is any artists out there that are keen to come along, by all means, come check us out down there. I don't want to say where we're at just yet. Like, we're going to release, like, where we're at.
Oh, is it a covert sort of thing? Is it?
Keep it on the download.
Keep it on the download for now.
Mm.
Now, I noticed there, did you do the banner painting and all that sort of stuff there at the men's shed on the weekend?
No, like, it wasn't banner painting. At the moment, we're making a 20 by 10 Aboriginal flag.
It's
20 metres long and then 10 metres down, like the width.
You're talking to a woman, I can't get spatial stuff. Sorry, yeah. So big.
So you were sewing?
Yeah. The first thing I ever sewed.
Yeah.
First thing I ever contributed to sewing was a 20-metre flag. So I'm pretty proud.
You were sewing? Hand job or sewing machine?
No, sewing machine.
Yeah.
You have to get industrial job, eh?
We bought 90 metres of black and red and 30 of the yellow.
Mm-hmm.
For the circle, we had to sew them together and then mark out the circle.
Mm. That's what I was going to say, bro. How would you get the circle to be a circle?
So
is it end up with like some like some like oblong shape?
No, it's a pretty good circle. It's a pretty good circle.
Pretty good circle?
Pretty good circle. Like we've done a good job there. But so that was like, we had to, because it's, I think it's, what is it? It's, because, and then with the material, we got 90 metres of the black and red.
Mm.
But we can only get 30 rolls each because that's how much they had on the roll. So
if there is a shortage of black, red and yellow material from Spotlight, other haberdashery stores, we know where to.
yes. Yeah, so And then, like, it's going to be difficult to sew the yellow onto the black and red. So I was thinking maybe, like, hand-stitching that.
Okay.
Like, with heaps of people.
Yeah.
So then it makes, you know, less time. Or unless, like we call somebody to put that together and that there. Hopefully, you know, like, they don't get too offended of sewing a big, you know, Aboriginal flag. But, yes, yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Calling all seamstresses.
Yes.
Yeah.
Contact Bo Spearham on Facebook, please, if you can show these lads or two how to sew.
I remember learning to sew. I don't know if they still do it in home ec class. But
like we did it in grade 8.
They don't even have home ec anymore.
Don't they?
No, yeah. It's called something else.
Like we did it in grade 8.
It's called Google.
And how to fry an egg. Yeah, Google it.
Like I didn't even sew the material. Like we had to sew two materials together. And for like the whole first term, like each term was there, and like we done some stuff in the kitchen, and then like some other different like stuff in like in those areas.
Mm.
Mind you, like they didn't let us in the kitchen because it was a class full of boys, and was like we mucked up in the sewing class.
Boys mucking up in sewing class.
Can't let them around. Sharp things. Hey, because we're so organised, we've got a grab here from Sunrise Show this morning, I believe.
Yeah. Yes, this morning from the panel.
Yeah.
From the panel featuring, Olga Havnen, Pat Turner and James Ward. And it's it's their hot topic.
Yeah.
Special.
Yeah.
It's a special hot topic.
Convened because of the outrage stemming from the Tuesday episode.
Yeah. So we might have a listen and we'll come back and we'll have a yarn, yeah?
Yeah, deadly.
All right. You listen to Let's Talk, and this is some audio from the Sunrise panel this morning following the outrage from last week about a story that Sunrise did last Tuesday on Indigenous child removals.
We're bringing you a special edition of Hot Topics, taking a closer look at the complex and very emotional issue of child protection, particularly in Indigenous communities. The topic was raised in an article on the front page of the Brisbane's Courier Mail last week, where the Assistant Federal Minister for Children, David Gillespie, suggested he wanted to relax rules around abused Aboriginal children being placed with relatives. Now, we know it's a conversation around Aboriginal children and their removal sparked concern and protests last week. So we're responding to calls by the Aboriginal community to look at the issue with the experts. And we've got the experts this morning. Olga Havnen in Darwin, James Ward in Cairns and Patricia Turner in Canberra. Good morning to you all. Thanks for joining us this morning. Now, the National Children's Commissioner says more than a third of children in the out-of-home care system where they've been removed from their own home are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. Olga, you've worked in Aboriginal affairs all your life. What's the process for taking a child out of their home?
Normally the process would be a notification followed by investigation, and if substantiation of serious harm or abuse, then the likelihood is that young person would be removed from that family. However, what I want to say from the outset is we absolutely believe that the safety and well-being of children is paramount, first and foremost. But secondly, in response to the question of removal of kids, we don't actually believe that that's necessarily the best course of action. The reason for that being that quite often with sufficient supports, we would hope that families might be able to continue to care for their children or alternatively extended family. If that's not possible, then there is absolutely no prohibition or restriction on the ability of non-Aboriginal people to care for children, either as foster carers or in permanent adoption. Yep. However, we don't see those processes being the solution. We have a child protection system that is absolutely under strain.
Patricia Turner, you've worked in Aboriginal affairs for 40 years. The figures show that Indigenous children are 7 times more likely as non-Indigenous children to have received child protection services. How do we tackle this over-representation?
Well, I think that it's about time government at all levels listened to what our sector has been saying, along with many other people who work with our communities, that we need the resources to set up early intervention family support services that are completely holistic. And in the health field, we would like to have a multidisciplinary team made up of paediatrician, social worker, clinical child psychologist, speech pathologists, you know, occupational therapists that can work with children who are highly traumatised and their families.
Yep.
And these services need to be invested in as a matter of priority. Just like, and we've been saying this to government for years, and it's just falling on deaf ears. So it's the responsibility. Children, there's a Commonwealth program called Communities for Children. Funding can be diverted from that into Aboriginal hotspots around the country. And honestly, we've got 6,000 children in out-of-home care in New South Wales alone. Yeah. It is outrageous.
Because, Patricia, people, leaders like Warren Mundine and Jacinta Price are saying, this is a discussion we've got to have. It's just the issue is so chronic. We spend lots of money in this area, but from what you're saying, we're spending it in the wrong places. Let's listen to the Indigenous community and really focus on this area to put the billions that we spend.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I've worked in Aboriginal affairs all my life. I've dealt with programs at the Commonwealth level. The thing is that the government is not listing. Full stop. There's plenty of money. There's plenty of money to spend on defence. There's plenty of money to spend on border security. Well, let's fix up this issue, which is a national shame for this country.
Yeah.
That was Sunrise Panel this morning, this very morning.
Would have been interested to have heard what James Ward says. So James Ward works in the sexual health field amongst Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
I watched the show and he... he discussed the thing around, you know, so one of the things that always grabs headlines is when they're discussing the
rates
of STIs amongst Indigenous young people. And he made the distinction about, you know, a large proportion when they're talking about this is underage minors, so under the age of 16, so I think 13 to 16, who are sexually active with their peer group. So when they're talking about, and so, you know, these rates have become misconstrued with like predatory behaviour of child abuse. And he's saying, but he did say that there are cases of STIs that occur with young people under the age of 13, which he believes in the last, which he stated in the last year was around five counts that were reported that are taken and construed as victims of child abuse.
Yeah.
You know? So there's this lack of, I guess, discussion about what these statistics mean and what these rates mean.
Yeah. Bit of clarity around it. I mean, you can, I guess you can look at these statistics and make a whatever narrative you want. And the most sensational one of those is that, you know, there's a alarming high rates of STIs and it's been done by, you know, Aboriginal men who were demonised in all of this, you know, who are doing these things to these poor, young, defenceless children who need saving by the white race again.
But this is the thing, though, too, and the comments about, you know, commentators around saying that we need to have the discussion. We absolutely do need to have the discussion, but it needs to be an informed discussion, you know.
And also let's not forget, you know, like there was a massive inquiry into, you know, pedophilia in churches and stuff as well. That sort of, you know, like it's wiped out in this discussion as well. But yeah, you know, I think that, you know, like a lot of the reason why, you know, children, you know, like they automatically get taken and, you know, put into non-Aboriginal homes. That, like, that's never not a discussion, you know, like that's the main issue, you know, today. And, you know, the majority of, you know, children that are in out-of-home care are in white families.
Yeah.
You know, and like the number's up to like maybe close to 20,000 now.
Yeah.
Watching that, the doco After the Apology by Larissa Brent, you know, she said every year, you know, the stats raise like 1,000, you know. And the doco was done 2 years ago. And they said 17,000, you know, and then after the film, I was saying, yeah, you know, every year. There's about, yeah, and so, like, the discussion, you know, for whether should Aboriginal or non-Aboriginal families, you know, take, you know, adopt Aboriginal kids, like, they're already having them, you know, and they're already bypassing, you know, the fact that, you know, families that are fit and well to, you know, look after their own kids, you know, are not even getting a mention within that discussion as well. And then also, like, the process, you know, the sort of, you know, get your children, you know, back in, you know, with family or with mob, or with, you know, back in the Aboriginal community is a massive process, you know, and sometimes, you know, they can put extended amount of times when time when that children gets to come back, they can put like, you know, they can put hold on them till like 18.
Wow.
And majority of cases, you know, like a lot of our mob, you know, don't get to, you know, go home.
Yeah.
And yeah, like they're in, you know, they're...
Yeah, where do the families, like and people who have experienced this stuff, where do they actually get to have a say in this discussion? Do you know what I mean?
That's it.
It's like on the one hand, it's like, yeah, it's a discussion we need to have. Well let's actually talk to families and people who have child who are in out-of-home care. And
but the other thing just, too, yes, no, you go.
You know, like when they get put in these, in foster care,
yeah.
You know, like we saw that big case in Logan, you know, where this brother was... where this young white teenager was abusing, you know, a young Aboriginal girl, and the father murdered this this child.
Yeah.
You know, that young teen, he's out now.
Mm.
His father's, you know, facing the charges as well. But, you know, like when
I believe it was done because the young girl fell
pregnant. He's going to plead guilty soon. So, you know.
But, you know, like so these kids get taken off their family, put in these white homes. If they don't behave enough, they get put in resi care, and then if they're not, you know, good enough in resi care, they get put in juvenile detention.
Mm.
You know, so like there's like this massive corridor of where they get stuck in, you know, like these young fellas, and then the family, you know, left on the side, you know, trying to figure out, you know, when are they going to see their kids next.
Mm. It's and you know, we talk about the cycle of, you know, poverty and those sorts of things, and you know, where is the sort of point. And where are the experts that actually know this stuff? You know?
And then also, like, they just release, you know, Turnbull's government just released that, you know, like, I think next June or July, like, they want to start punishing families that test positive, you know, for drugs and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, a lot of these
families... Is that just for the family tax benefit or is that just for welfare recipients?
Welfare recipients, I think, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Well, it's a slippery slope when you start sort of saying, you know, no jab, no welfare and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Now, whether you rightly or wrongly support immunisation and stuff like that, but that's, again, a form of social engineering that's made to make people behave the way we want you to.
And this is where it all falls down, though, is the evidence say that none of these things work.
Mm.
What these things actually do is perpetuate the beliefs and the concepts of people and the voting, or what politicians perceive as the voting public, you know, and it's the media that drive all of this sort of rhetoric that only serves to generate outrage, you know, and to demonise people. And it doesn't actually redress and target the specific issues and the causes of the problems. You know, if you want to talk, if you want to talk to people who know this stuff, go to any tertiary institution in the country. You know, why should we be listening to people? Why should we be listening to people who essentially won a popularity contest in politicians that aren't experts in this area?
Or people who are putting out this information who are in a popularity contest trying to win ratings as well.
Meanwhile, we have actual families who are being taken apart, who do have their young people out of home and have nobody to actually listen to them and their concerns. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Yes.
Oh, wow, is it that time?
It's awesome. It is time.